Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. This week's Dharma Talk is entitled Jewel Ornament of Liberation, Chapter 7, The Instructions on Meditation on Loving Kindness and Compassion by Kathy Lamo Jackson. The teachings of the Buddha focus on freedom from suffering, but we do not wish for only ourselves to be free of suffering. We want to liberate all sentient beings. The tools for this liberation are in our hands. Our own love and compassion can liberate us and all beings from suffering. If you like our Dharma Talk series, please consider donating to Columbus Karma Teksum Choling at columbusktc.org. Enjoy the podcast.
So it's so good to see all of you. Today is a rather joyous day because today is Trungpa Rinpoche's 87th or 88th birthday, depending on how the Tibetans count the birthday. And he's not the author of the text, but he's the author of this book that many of us are using. So today, this is the, I don't know what class, but I do know what I'm teaching on, because we've been kind of putting some of the chapters together. This is called the Jewel Ornament of Liberation. And today's class is on loving kindness and compassion. So I wanted to speak for a moment about Lord Gampopa. I was sick the day that Lama Kathy did she had to do the presentation for me. I'm most grateful for that. But I just thought I would spend just a few minutes about who the actual author of this text is. He was born in 1079. He was raised from the age of 12 onward as a doctor by his father, who was a famous doctor in Tibet. So he's from Tibet. And in those days, there weren't many doctors in Tibet. So his father studied in India and in China and Nepal. So Gampopa was raised in a very much of an erudite family where he was very educated. He got married at a young age. There was an epidemic at that time. His whole village died out, including his wife and child. I'm not sure how many children he had. He was very dedicated to the Dharma and decided to take on the vows of a monk. He studied with Lord Atisha and that style, which was more of the Lojong style of Buddhism, studying very much step by step, kind of building on itself, which is pretty much what this book is a reflection of. But he started having dreams and visions that he wanted to meet and a teacher that I kind of have this later on. I'll show a picture now. He had a dream of the central figure here is Milarepa, the yogi Milarepa. And Milarepa had dreamt of him. And Gampopa had already been, I'll explain this picture for a moment. So Milarepa is the figure kind of greenish white because he always ate nettles, stinging nettles, which turn everything green if you live in Asia, but high in chlorophyll. So what most of the yogis have to eat because they don't have a lot of food. On his lower right is Gampopa in this picture. This is called a lineage picture. Above Milarepa is Marpa. Directly above him is Dorje Chang. And Tilopa and Naropa are up there. I believe Tilopa is on the left. Yeah, there's a fish and Naropa is on the right. So this is called the short lineage. And Lord Gampopa was the one who completely really organized this because Marpa was a householder. Milarepa was a yogi, but it was Gampopa who set up all the monasteries. And so what he did was he took two main streams of Buddhism, of Tibetan Buddhism, and brought them together. So not only did he have the one of the Mahayana style, particularly regarding, as I said, the graduated method. But he also studied with Lord Milarepa, who was famous for his Mahamudra or realization practices. So we're very much blessed to have this text. And I thought for a moment, I'm afraid to go back and forth out of this, but I'm only going to stay in PowerPoint for a little bit because I think two of the exercises in this chapter are very, very poignant. So now I thought I would spend a moment talking about the text itself. I took a whole lot of notes the other night when I worked late. According to His Holiness Gyalwa Karmapa, we should consider reading from the jewel ornament unlike reading any other type of book. And then this is from, I have been studying also the book called Ornament. It's the same book, but a different title, Ornament of Precious Liberation by Ken Holmes and Katja Holmes. This book has the power of direct transmission from master to student. And Gampopa predicted that if you could not meet him in person, then the best way to meet him and get his blessings was through his texts. He did three main texts. This is considered the longer one. This one is an explanation of the essential elements involved in the gradual ascent of the Bodhisattva path from being a beginner all the way to Buddhahood, which is the last chapter. And what's very unique about this text is it's very direct. It's not very fancy. And it's meant to be a learning tool. And in every monastery in the Karmakagyu lineage, this is one of the main texts they study, sometimes for years. But it's so direct and so simple that most of them memorize it. And every book I've gone through and studied, they all have the identical examples. So they were definitely all using the main text, which made me really happy. And let's see if there's anything else. What's interesting about the text is, as I said, everything kind of builds upon itself. So you noticed in the first chapter, it was Buddha nature, and then it kept going from there. That's kind of the very seed of enlightenment and becoming a Buddha, and then all the different steps. So after that one, the first chapter was the prime cause. Sorry, the first section. There's 21 chapters, but it's divided into six sections. The second, the very basis is in order to develop that seed of Buddha nature, we then have to have a good condition, which is our precious human birth. And then to further that along is the Dharma Master. Some analogies are that these six chapters are like the growing of a tree, with Buddha nature being the seed. And as I said, human existence is kind of like the condition. And then the Dharma teacher is the one who really invigorates and makes everything start to grow. And then the means, which is the largest part of the book, which is part of what this chapter is the teacher's instructions. And let's see, the teacher's instructions or the means are kind of the chemical interaction that determines this transformation. And then at the end, the full results is the fruition of enlightenment, which is the fifth section. Of the results of the bodies of the perfect Buddhahood. And then the sixth section is the activity is to conceptuality or conceptually fill the welfare of all beings. Anyway, so that's how the book is set up. This is section four, method, loving kindness and compassion. And I'm going to just completely go wild here and go off for a second. I did it, didn't I? Let's see if I can get back in here and see all of you for a second. Yes, I can. Oh, good. Hi, everyone, again. I can't stand just having a straight PowerPoint. There's a term in the business world called death by PowerPoint. And this chapter would put you to sleep if I followed my PowerPoint. So I decided it was more important because of timeline to talk about the two sections. So there's loving kindness and compassion. And I think we all know I always learn this because of the four immeasurables. The first one is may all beings gain happiness in the cause of happiness, loving kindness. Loving kindness is happiness. Compassion is the second line. May all beings be free of suffering and the cause of suffering. So this entire chapter is so well laid out. Of course, my notes are up on the screen, so I'm going to have to jump back for a minute. So I'll go back one more time and then into share screen. Okay, so I just talked about what is loving kindness. And so this is a really interesting chapter when you get to how they're organized. So each chapter, this is it. each chapter is, in this chapter, we have two parts, loving kindness and compassion. And they both have the same identical sections, but of course with different fill-in. They both talk about how it's classified, the object, identifying characteristics, the method of practice, the measure of practice and benefits. So let's just go into this really fast. I talked about what wishing all the demons for loving kindness first, happiness, and may they know its very cause. It doesn't help to find happiness and then lose it instantly. And then the part of the classification is, well, what's the, who are we going to be focusing on? In this chapter, it's sentient beings. And there were different classifications, but we're primarily going to be talking about that. And they suffer as they do not understand the nature of things. All right, let me move on. Let's talk about the object. The object of all loving kindness is focused towards everyone. And Trungpa Rinpoche particularly spent a lot of extra time in his book talking about this. And so many times, I've shared the story before when I've asked about, so many times in our center, people say, let's start a prayer list for specific people. And Trungpa Rinpoche always said to me, no. We only pray for who we love or know or want to influence or want them to like us. It's better to pray for everyone, especially people that you normally would not want to pray for. So sometimes when you're offering up your merit, maybe you should think about the people you haven't included in your audience of those that you pray for. And then next was the identifying characteristic, which is the wish to help others find happiness. Moving on, and maybe the part where I'm going to spend the most amount of time for both sides, both loving kindness and compassion, is the method of practice. So reflecting on the kindness, oh, I have two of's, of beings, because love depends on being mindful of kindness as its root. So the method here is a technique. And both with loving kindness and compassion, they use one's mother. But Trungpa Rinpoche did put in that if you're not comfortable with your relationship with your mother, then don't use that. So I think the most important thing that we can pull out of this chapter are two things. We know all those other things I just listed, but this is the part that I thought was the most moving for me. Are the exercises. So first we're going to do the exercise on loving kindness. So I don't know about you, but I feel it never hurts to really rev up that deep feeling for other people. And I don't always have that. And so what I'm going to talk about right now is not something you just read about and then move on to the next chapter. This is something that you actually integrate into your life and as a practice, as a contemplative practice. And it's, you would imagine in front of you is the person that you love very dearly. And the Tibetans always use their mother because they have a very, very, being a nomadic culture, I would think their mother is more than anything for them. They don't usually have many other people that raise them. It's usually always the mother who's always working outside, raising the yaks, bringing them in, making butter, making milk, raising the other children, getting firewood, you name it. So the meditation is, I'm going to look in the book too, because it's really, did all of you get to read the chapter yet? Well, they did a really nice job in here, I must say. So it's called the Four Contemplations for Loving Kindness. First, meditate on the kindness of what your mother gave you, which was the body that we now have. Why is this significant? This is a very precious birth all of you have. Not many people meet the Holy Dharma. They say it's as rare as stars in a day sky. So your mother used her body to make you. And I'm not a mother, but I can imagine how much effort that takes, how much discomfort. If you've ever been around someone who's 8 months pregnant, they look very uncomfortable. I mean, they're sacrificing their own health for you. So that's the first thing. So that if that doesn't touch your heart, then let's move on. And if it doesn't, then maybe read up about it a little bit more. And Chan Rinpoche does, so he says things, this I really love what he how he put this. Presently, we have this very extraordinary human body that is so precious, have all the right opportunities and freedoms. We can practice the Dharma with this body, and it's the very best tool that we could find in order to reach liberation. It is said that the human body is even more precious than a wish-fulfilling gem. We have all gone through our mother's kindness. Even if we are someone who does not follow the spiritual path still, this worldly body is better than other forms of existence. Comparing our condition with that of wild animals, they are more dependent on others for food and safety later on in their lives. But for us, most of us have been with our mothers, I mean, until my mother passed away, she's still my mom, you know? I could always know I could go to her. All right, secondly, here's a second meditation. Our mothers have gone through many hardships and difficulties on our account. Now, sometimes they talk just about the beginning, but a lot of us, if you have the kind of life most of us have had, they've suffered in other times in other ways, worried about us late at night and whatever. All right, so this is what Trungpa Rinpoche, let me go through a little bit. What was it like when we were born? Did we come into this world wearing nice clothes and jewels, carrying enough money and food with us? Of course, we did not. We came into the world naked and empty-handed. And in fact, we mainly consisted of a mouth and stomach. Do we have friends and acquaintances that could help us? No, we were completely alone. And who was it that helped us? It was our mother. And our mothers gave up a lot. I mean, I see so many single mothers, I can't believe they're working. They're working to feed that baby, that child. Or I mean, even married mothers. I mean, it's a lot. Do any of you have any comments yet? Any of you can unmute if any of you have a good mom story. I'll tell one. When I was born, my hips weren't finished growing. I didn't know it. I was probably 6 months old and I started walking and they knew something was wrong. My parents went into full debt to take me to the best doctors who didn't do any surgery. They just fed me vitamins and took x-rays like every week. And my parents really, it was not part of the plan, but my mother was always there. And they were so concerned about me in the future, they never took photographs of me because they didn't want me to be embarrassed. My mother was pregnant with my little brother while she had to carry me. And oh, I had a cast on from my waist down. I mean, it was because of the way my hips weren't yet grown. So they wanted to grow in right. And it was just amazing the sacrifices my mother and father made, but particularly my mother. So, and if you have one of those selfless moms, and she never threw it up in my face, which is amazing. I would have, but she didn't. She was pretty amazing. Any of you have anything? Any of you have someone else besides a mom that you're using? Are all of you going to be quiet today? All right, so let's move on. So she sacrificed body. She sacrificed their time, their resources. And the third way is our mother, whoever it is, or whoever you've chosen to be the object of your meditation so that you can develop more loving kindness for everyone. They also protected us, preserved our very life in so many ways. And lastly, our mother was usually our first teacher. She not only taught us, I'm not talking about school, she taught us how to function and be in the world, how to work with other people, how to feed ourselves, clothe ourselves, become who we are now. Our mothers or whoever the person is that you're using is pretty amazing. So these are the type of meditations or contemplations that we use. And how would I do that? If I feel this is an area I would like to develop, I would just maybe before my meditation, read a little bit out of Chöngö's book or someone else's book. And just, I like to read just a few paragraphs for inspiration. And then His Holiness so many times says, the more important thing is not what you know, but how you feel. So this is really a practice about feeling. Okay, so let's move on to loving, to compassion, because we're about starting to move through time now. Now, compassion, the object of our meditation and compassion, which is the wish that all beings be free of suffering. And I have to say, the books are pretty graphic on this part. And if you're following the book, I'm on page around 104. I'm kind of moving around fast. So the object in this are all sentient beings. They are our guest. And as Chöngö Rinpoche said so well, who are we doing this for? We're doing this for every living being, especially those that we don't want to pray for, especially those that maybe we forget, all the invisible people that are out in our worlds that we normally don't connect with. So, and that's not a bad thing. I mean, it's just how it is. Most people connect with family or people that they know. But as Buddhists, we have a much bigger world, and which is really cool. So, there was a very interesting analogy that I love to read. The Buddha had a disciple called the realized Gotaya. I don't know if any of you have ever heard this analogy, but it's very interesting. This has to do with how we're all related. One day Gotaya went out to beg for alms. He happened to meet a family and experienced a scene in which he saw a father seated and eating a fish. There was a dog on the ground watching him and a son on the lap who he was cuddling while he was eating the fish. He saw the dog try to nibble at the little meat left on the bone of the fish, and the man kicked the dog. Since Gotaya was a realized being and was clairvoyant, he could see the relationship between all of them. He saw that the fish being eaten was actually the father of the man eating it in his previous life. The dog being kicked was a man's mother in a previous life. The child being cuddled on his lap was one of his worst enemies. So Gotaya witnessed this strange scene of a father eating his own father's body, kicking his own mother, and cuddling his enemy in his lap. Also, by the way, with this relationship, the dog was once his wife and was now eating what had once been her previous husband's flesh. So anyway, it talks about we're probably a lot more related in so many ways than we think. And then moving on to, let's get to the practice in this one. So the method of practice is to apply compassion towards one's mother in meditation. Again, or anyone we find a tender spot in our heart for. And there are four meditations. Now, this is much more graphic. I just have to warn you. And I'll cut out how graphic it is. But so first, you imagine the person that you're wishing to develop compassion for is seated in front of you on all four of these. The first instance, suddenly a gang appears of aggressors, and they start beating up that person's body. They torture them. They put them in a freezer and freeze them. They put them in boiling water. They tear up their limbs. Chöngö Rinpoche said, we immediately imagine what a horrific pain this must cause and feel spontaneous compassion. We can't even put up with that idea, is someone so dear to us suffering in such a way? And I would dare say most of us would never even think of this. We don't live in that type of world, supposedly. But if you think about it, there are people that are tortured in our world. We never think of them. It's too difficult to think of. Well, if we think that everyone has been our mother, then our mothers are being tortured now. And then if any of you are familiar with the six realms of existence, these are actually the type of sufferings of beings in the hell realm. They have nonstop suffering of torture, of heat. And they've all been our mothers and our fathers and dear ones that we have loved. And now, due to their karma, they're suffering a type of suffering we can't even imagine. Second, and this has to do more with the hungry ghost, the second type of meditation involves seeing a person that, again, that we love in front of us, that we're developing compassion for, that we're reminded of our compassion for them. We imagine that the person looks starved and thirsty and is in great pain. We also feel their fear and anguish. And if any of you know about the hungry ghost, it even hurts to move because they're so dry. Everything is brittle, and the way they're formed, their stomach is gigantic and their mouth is so tiny they can hardly even, a drop of water is too much pain. So we feel that there is nothing that we wouldn't do to stop this type of pain. That's the type of meditation. The third step of meditation involves seeing the person that we love in front of us, and they no longer have the faculty to communicate or to understand what we're saying. And this would be the animal realm. Many of us, we think of the animal realm as the sweet pets that we take care of and have the wonderful fortune to have that karma. But let's think of other animals we can think of. Maybe turkeys right now, unfortunately, or animals in a slaughterhouse. They go through unbelievable suffering and no one can stop it. It's a type of slavery. So again, the meditation would be, these meditations are meant to be uncomfortable, especially the compassion ones. Again, they're by Gampopa. He sort of just mince words. But they're very moving if you just do them slowly. I'm sort of throwing them all at you at once. I apologize. And so he goes on to say, the first three of these that we talked about, which was show us how to develop compassion with respect to beings in the three lower realms, the hell realm, hungry ghosts, and animal. And the suffering is very intense, very acute, and very obvious. But let's move on now to the upper realms, the three higher realms. And that would be us, humans, the demigods, and the god realm. And here we might think that there's no need to generate compassion for them because they're just fine. Well, they're suffering here too. It's just a very different suffering. So the suffering that we suffer from in these three realms is kind of all balled together as one, which is the suffering of, the analogy was, we're unable to see, we're blinded, and there is a giant abyss in front of us, and we're ready to step into it because we're ready to fall from the realm that we're in now, because we don't know how to live a virtuous life. We don't have the opportunities like all of us have. And so let me read this a little bit more. The example can be applied to the situation of the beings in the higher realms, gods, demigods, and humans, in the short term, seem to have a good life. They haven't the faintest idea now that they are creating more suffering due to negativity for the future. And they have no connection with a spiritual friend or guide to tell them this. So that is the fear And the meditation for them is that they find a guide and they find out what's really going on. When we realize this, that we feel that there's nothing we wouldn't do to stop them from falling into the lower realms. And that there is nothing we wouldn't do to help them to get out of this terrible situation. This meditation is on the compassion with respect to being in the higher realms. So as a synopsis, and this is all for the compassion. Those are the four ways of meditating on compassion. The first, generating compassion that wishes to protect beings from the suffering of heat and cold of the hells. And the second one was to protect beings from the suffering of hunger and thirst. And the third was to protect beings from stupidity and enslavement in the realm of the animals. And the fourth was to develop compassion for the higher realms doomed to go to the lower realms due to their ignorance. So those are the two meditations. Before I move on, so how is everyone doing? Can anyone relate to this, or is this too far-fetched?
I would just share that this sounds familiar to the practice before you do Tonglen, that it sounds like very often we're encouraged to think of a source of kindness, our mother or someone who's been kind to us, and try and develop that. And I think, like in Lama Kathy's class about the great path of awakening, I think it also goes through developing this. Yeah. Like, it seems to be a strong part of our practice to try and arouse this deep loving kindness and compassion.
That's really a beautiful word, arouse, because I think that's really something that we have to start opening ourselves up to and start growing into that. And yes, there's no question that these themes are all repeating themselves a lot. And Gampopa pretty much, I think, probably had a lot to do with a lot of those texts later on coming about and kind of organizing this way. So, and I also could see that this might be hard if you were a young monk, or maybe somebody that maybe had, because monks often, I mean, their lives can be a little hard too, but you know, a lot of us in the world, we see a lot more of the suffering. So, but I would think some cultures, it would be really important to see that, especially when you're young. So do any of you think you can do this? Maybe I should start. Anyone going to try it?
I was impressed.
Yes, Sally?
At how graphically to think of each realm. It never occurred to me to do that. It certainly does bring to mind the possibility of human existence.
Right. In the Chenrezig practice, you know, the mantra Chenrezig is for the six realms. Om Mani Padme Hum is six syllables. So when we do the Om Mani Padme Hum, we actually visualize for a moment sending compassion to each of those realms. And okay. It's very beautiful. But yes, it's true. We don't spend enough time thinking outside our little box, you might say. So Eric, are you okay? I can't tell if you're taking it in or if I'm boring you to death.
No, it's great. I've tried these practices before when I first read them in the book, and it's a good reminder. I've actually gotten away from them, but they're very powerful, especially the compassionate one.
That's a hard one for me. Yeah.
Very powerful. And I really actually appreciate the story, you know, the bizarre scene where we're eating our father and, you know, kicking our former wives and stuff. I don't know. It kind of reminds me of Tonglen when I try to focus on my enemies, right? That's when Tonglen always feels the most powerful when I try to deal with someone that I don't care for. And that story kind of reminds me of that same theme, that same concept. And I appreciate all good reminders. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for the feedback. You know, that's an interesting thing you say about Tonglen. I always love how they have us start out with those that we love and then then slowly we moved to the neutral and then to the enemies. And I've told the story many times of I had to start a year program, and day two, one of the people that I knew I would be with literally a foot, 2 feet away from me for a year, in front of all my peers, called me the most despicable person and not worthy to say I'm Buddhist. She was Episcopalian. And I went home, and I never before clung to Tonglen. It was my lighthouse. It's the only thing I could cling to, because we weren't supposed to discuss it with anyone. So yes, I forget sometimes that I do have enemies or people that I don't really want to deal with. No question about it. At the hospital, I always try and say hi to people I don't want to say hi to. It's a good practice for me. So, well, thank you everyone for your beautiful comments. I just have a few more things here. Let's see. Deborah wrote, I wouldn't know how to incorporate into Gondor. What is Gondor? Nundro, can you unmute?
Yes.
Was that Nundro?
Did I mistype it? Nundro, yes.
Did you learn a new type of Nundro? Gondor, I like that. I'm teasing. It's N, you know why? Because it's NG. Yeah, it's a weird start to a word. Yes, you could definitely, if you're ever in retreat, before you start doing even prostrations, you spend a month on each of the four ordinaries, mm-hmm. like a whole month thinking about your precious human birth. I mean, you know, you can hear everyone weeping about thinking about the contemplation of sometimes I can't do meditations that make me too upset. I need to feel inspiration. So, or if I want the upset ones, I just do little bits until I get stronger. But yes, this is similar to that, where you would, so every day before you would start Nundro, start the physical part of it, when you're chanting it, we actually chant it like each section and stop after each one and spend a few moments, because you're supposed to be able to actually feel it and raise the tears. You know, we're considered the weeping lineage. I don't know if any of you know that.
No.
Karmakai, you are the weeping. We're really into the heart, man. So yeah, go for it. And I think it's really important. Okay. So the last thing I wanted to go through were the benefits. They're kind of awesome. So I thought I would, so let's see, this is for just the compassion part, but there's eight of them. So let me do this. The eight immediate benefits, in addition, there are more, maybe I should go to the first one. I even put an asterisk by it. The sixth point of the chapter, of course, this is the one on just compassion, explains the benefits that come from having the quality of compassion. But you know, in order to be fair, I need to go back to loving kindness for just 1 second and do that benefit. It's a very beautiful benefit. It is said that loving kindness is a source of all happiness for oneself and others. As is stated in the text, the precious jewel garland, one will be loved by the gods and human beings and will also be protected by them and will achieve mental peace and happiness. It will not be harmed by poisons or weapons and will achieve our wishes without any effort and will be reborn in the Brahma world. I don't know what that is. Even one who is not liberated from samsara will obtain these eight benefits just from generating loving kindness. But let's move on to compassion. This is the big one. If you have just one quality, it would be as if all the Buddha's dharma were in your palm. And what quality is that? To have great compassion. So moving on to the benefits, the first benefit is everyone else will be kind and loving towards us. I wonder if they mean in real time. I'm joking. The second good quality is everybody will try to help and protect us. The third, we will be happy and mentally at ease. The fourth benefit from positive result of generating compassion, we'll be happy and at ease in the body. The fifth and sixth benefits are freedom from fear of poison and weapons. I know that sounds funny now, but in ancient times, that was probably a big deal. If we are an angry and hateful person, then this will bring many enemies. We have many enemies, and they're going to try to eliminate us with poison and weapons. That makes sense. So if we're a loving person, they wouldn't bother. The seventh benefit is that all of our efforts will be successful with only a minimum of effort. Eighth benefit, we'll have a good body in our next life. Oh, good. Oh, and there's a ninth benefit. The Mandalorian will visit you. I'm joking. So I'm such a fan. So those are the benefits. And it's pretty awesome. And I think we're doing pretty well on time today. I thank you. I didn't go through my entire boring PowerPoint. This is much funner to look at all your lovely faces. Are there any questions I can answer? Because look, something's up here. Let's see. This is from Kunga Karma. The exercise is helping in making me less self-focused. That's beautifully put. Yes. We're so focused on ourselves, aren't we? We're really an expert at practicing loving kindness and compassion, but mostly for ourselves. Mm-hmm. I always love His Holiness. The Dalai Lama always uses the term self-cherishing. We're experts at that. Well, let's take a moment and dedicate the merit for all living beings. And also dedicate the merit for Trungpa Rinpoche, since it's his 87th birthday. And just use whatever words that are in your heart to make the dedication. Thank you, everyone. I hope you have a lovely day. Enjoy it. Spread the love. See you later.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.